Okay, I know this is something that's hard. It's hard to acknowledge because we don't want to say that one child is better or worse than the other. But there are certain achievements that certain children will be able to bring to the world that other of our children will not be able to. And as much as that is cringeworthy in the thought, but it's the reality. It's the reality. And it doesn't mean that on a personal level, one was more successful than the other. Just like it doesn't mean that the Indian, the guy who runs with the The guy who runs with the rickshaw in India his whole life for 30 years and has been breaking his back to give people a ride on his rickshaw is any less of a success on a personal scale based on what God's expectations of him were than Jonas Salk, who finds a cure for bacterial disease. But the point is that look at the impact that one has made on the world versus the other. And the contribution to humanity and the advancement of human civilization and the welfare of humanity that one has made versus the other. Yes?
And the thing is, just because they achieve those accomplishments doesn't mean they succeeded in other areas of life.
Absolutely.
Everyone has affected the whole world. But he had a terrible personal life.
That's right. Sometimes people aren't meant to live for themselves. They're meant to exist for others. That's a good point as well. Okay, so you see that even though we say that the Jewish people, so I think it's appropriate to say that just like we all have difficulty with admitting that, or it's we have to qualify very carefully when we talk about one child being more prone to achievement or success than the other child, we also have to acknowledge that when we talk about the Jewish people being the chosen people, think about all of humanity as Hashem's children. Just like Hashem's not going to play favorites necessarily with one child over the other, but he does realize he had created the Jewish people with certain resources and faculties on a spiritual plane that surpass the rest of humanity. That's Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's thesis. He created Eretz Yisrael that has certain spiritual capacities that surpassed any other geographic location on the planet, just like Shabbos has certain spiritual faculties that far surpass any other day of the week. I'm willing to continue this conversation. I know that it's a difficult issue. But that's why I said it's a semantical issue. We all acknowledge this. We all acknowledge this. Unless someone says, no, I still disagree. Go ahead.
So child has something special to contribute. It may not be the same thing, but everybody is special in their own way. And let's say some great person does something for the world, another person can do something for another human being, which is equally as good because another human being is like the whole world too. Like they say that, one person is if you save a person's life, you save the whole world. So you have to really, see that
it's not always easy to see what the contributions that individuals make, and we certainly don't want to minimize that. Every single person has an important contribution to make to the world in some way, otherwise they would not have been born. Mm-hmm. Every single person has a contribution, a vital contribution, otherwise they wouldn't exist. But remember what the villain said in the, what was his name? I don't remember the name of the villain anymore. No, in the Incredibles, he said, when Syndrome, I think was his name, Syndrome. When everyone is special, no one is special. Yes?
Well, I think what we're talking about is what you said at the beginning. It's very difficult to hold both ideas in your head at the same time.
Yeah.
And we're demonstrating that.
Yes.
Exactly. But yes, I've got one idea over here that some people are going to contribute more to the world. They're going to win Nobel Prizes. They're going to, do all kinds of amazing things. They're going to go into space. Other people are going to work very quietly behind the scenes. And some people are just not going to have a very worldly successful life or personal sometimes. And you just have to carry that with you. So we're carrying that in both sides of our minds. And it's hard. But that's the way it is.
Yeah. I always go back to the metaphor of the tree. If I was a leaf on a tree, which I probably am. This is an existential crisis I have. But if I was a leaf on a tree, I would probably be somewhat jealous of the apple, because I'm not an apple, right? But at the same time, I could take comfort in the fact that the apple could not exist if I wasn't on the tree also.
I don't think it's an argument.
Yep, okay, all right, yes.
To quote Animal Farm by George Orwell,
yes.
All animals are equal, but some are more equal than others.
Yes.
Kind of the same thing.
Right, well, right, yes, well, that's so, right, George Orwell was trying to point out the evils of socialism or communism. To try and equate everything eventually results in a breakdown politically. He was talking about the political failure of a political system which tries to put everyone on an equal playing field. Ultimately, you can't. It's impossible to do that. Yes?
I still disagree. I'm sorry.
Good. No, that's okay.
I don't agree with your definition of success. You're talking about impact on the world and notoriety. And I
no, notoriety is a negative word, but you can say fame.
Okay, fame. I don't buy that as successful. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, the hardest thing in the world is to change one of your midos. And if a person changes one of their midos, it could be as if he climbed Mount Everest, but only Hashem will know it. Whereas if you discover a vaccine, everyone will know it. But who's to say that in Hashem's book, that person isn't greater than the person who developed the vaccine?
Well, what does greater mean? What does that mean, greater? He's greater in the sense that he conquered his own personal demons more than the other person who developed the vaccine.
Well, isn't that our whole point here?
No, because what we're saying is that there are destinies that each and every one of us has to impact the entire world. And you're right, on one level, there are people who only Hashem will know what their personal accomplishments are. And those should not be minimized, because everyone has their own challenges that only are gaugeable between themselves and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in the way that we gauge people's ambitions for being able to make a difference in life, no one wants to be the person who no one remembers, who no one shows up for that person's levaya. No one wants to be that person. No one wants to be that person. So it's one thing to say, I am satisfied with my personal accomplishments because, you know, I had certain struggles that I had in life and I was able to overcome them. But at the end of the day, if no one's going to come to my levaya because I didn't change, I didn't impact other people's lives, that is in itself a tragic demise. That's a tragic end. And I think we have to acknowledge that objectively, that the more people we're able to affect in life, the more impact that we're able to have on our environment, to be able to make the world a little bit of a better place than it was before we came into the world, is in itself a sign of satisfaction, is in itself a sign of success, right? Not just between myself and the Ribono Shel Olam, but also to feel that I've accomplished something that goes well, that transcends only myself. And that in itself is an important goal to achieve. I'm not negating that there are personal successes that only a person can gauge between himself and the Ribono Shel Olam. Those in itself are very important. But there's also the other side, like Patricia was saying, there's the other aspect of success and of accomplishment, which means that I change the world in a positive way. And in that respect, no two human beings are the same. And you can gauge on an objective level that some people will be able to change the world more and some people will not be able to change the world as much. Are they any less beloved by the Ribono Shel Olam? No. But just like the Jewish people are God's chosen people, what are we chosen for? We're chosen to be able to change the world and make an impact on the world in some way. Our responsibility is to bring about the Yemos HaMashiach. We have to be Hashem's partners in that. And therefore Hashem has a special calling for us. So does that mean that we can just ignore that as a sense of accomplishment and achievement? No, because that's our purpose. We have to recognize that that's part of the purpose of Klal Yisrael. Yeah.
It occurs to me that if every person in the world was destined to affect humanity, it would be chaos. 6 billion people affecting the world, it's just...
That's why I said when everyone is special, no one is. So we can't all expect to affect humanity. But every single person has a sphere of affectation, Right? The rickshaw driver will affect all the people who get on the rickshaw.
But you can't have 6 billion Einsteins or...
Of course not, because when everyone is special, no one is.
But it would be chaos logistically.
I got you. Yeah,
as it is, the world is moving so fast, and it's only a few individuals.
All right. Okay, I think we've made our point. We're ready to move on. So therefore, just like people and places are certain more special than others, more designated than others. So at the top of page 164, he writes that God would manifest himself to them at times designated by him, not times based on popular choice or on astrology or any other science. The specialness of time is not arbitrary either. The specialness of time is based upon divine designation. These times were called festivals of God, or Mo'adei Hashem, times of meeting with God, and were marked by acts of purification, service in the temple, and the performance of other commandments and activities designed by God, known as the work of God and service of God. So basically, when you had this time of meeting with Hashem, there were certain prescribed behaviors that Hashem asked of us to perform, which is to the performance of the karbanos. And this all speaks to the specificity that is the mitzvahs of the Torah. Hashem says there are specific times, places, and people that are expected to perform very specific actions in order to be able to bring about a conjunction, a coming together between heaven and earth. None of this is arbitrary. This is based upon specific prescriptions by Hashem, going back to our discussion of the medicine cabinet. If you remember that discussion from the first essay, which we've cited many times before, where Rabbi Yehuda Halevi compares the mitzvahs of the Torah to specific pharmaceuticals, which have to be dispensed for specific drugs for specific people in specific dosages and so forth, so that, you know, every mitzvah is like a pharmaceutical, is like a drug. It has to be performed in exactly a specific way in order for it to be effective. And if you try to shake a lulav in May, it's not going to do anything, right? So it has to be done in a specific way, in a specific time, and in a specific place. So number 17, the Kuzari said, in this environment, it was certainly appropriate for the glory of Hashem to appear to the people known as the nation of Hashem, the Am Hashem. So again, he's pointing out that because of this idea of specialness, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically designates a time, he specifically designates a place, and he specifically designates a people, that's certainly, therefore, the time when it's appropriate for Hashem to appear. Again, Rabbi Yehuda Levi's whole thesis is that in order for Hashem to be able to come into this world, there has to be specialness designated to the different components of this world, so that Hashem shows that my Shechina, my divine presence, will only connect to those people, places, and things that have been specially designated for that purpose. So then the rabbi says, and so the point that he's making is that, you know, after discussing the specificity in place and time, now the rabbi is going to say that you can see that Eretz Yisrael is a combination of both specialness in time and specialness in place. How does he say that? So this is paragraph 18. Number one, the rabbi said, you can see how even the land has been designated with the Shabbos, as it says, Shabbos Lashem, a Sabbath for the land. And the land shall observe a Shabbos rest for God. No one was permitted to sell the land permanently, as it says, and the land shall not be sold permanently, for the land is mine. So here what he's pointing out is that the Shemitah year, which we are in the midst of right now, is a perfect example of the coalescence of both specialness in time and specialness in place. That Eretz Yisrael has both qualities. Not only is Eretz Yisrael special geographically or spatially, but Eretz Yisrael also has a specialness in time, because Hashem says that even the special land of Eretz Yisrael has different times in which the land is even more special than others. During a Shemitah year, the land is even holier than it is during the other 6 years. And another example of the specialness of the land is that it cannot be sold permanently, cannot be owned permanently by any individual. The land always reverts back to God during the Yovel, during the Jubilee year. So these are all signs of the specialness of Eretz Yisrael. So this is really the conclusion of our discussion about the specialness of Eretz Yisrael, at least as far as it concerns biblical passages. The next is going to be a further argument about the specialness of Eretz Yisrael based upon its geographic centrality, the fact that Eretz Yisrael is the center of the world. Now, it's not the center of the world because, I mean, that's problematic. I mean, you look at a sphere, you take a beach ball, right? Take a beach ball or a basketball, for example, and show me any point on the surface of the ball that is the center of the ball. Can anyone do that? Can you do that? No. There's no such thing as the center on the surface of a sphere. And yet that's precisely what we are proposing to say about Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Yehuda Halevi has a very, very creative way of explaining how Eretz Yisrael can still be considered to be the center, even though it's on the surface of a sphere that has no center. And that's going to be the next discussion. We're just going to read the first two lines of that discussion as follows. You should further realize that the times for all the Sabbaths and festivals are dependent upon the time in the land of Israel. Now, what does he mean by that? As you're going to see, he's going to tell us that the criterion for what determines the new day and ultimately what determines when Shabbos comes in is what time it is on Shabbos, which doesn't seem to make any sense because Shabbos is not the international dateline. And the question, next question I have for you is, what is the international dateline? And what is its role in determining when the day starts in Jewish law? So that's going to be a topic that we're going to try and undertake next time. And we're going to do most of our discussion outside the text because it gets a little bit complicated. I shouldn't say a little bit, it gets very, very complicated when we go inside the text. We're going to skip about... about 10 pages of the Kuzari inside. This will be the only time in the immediate future that we're going to be skipping pages. We're going to skip about 10 pages in the Kuzari, and we'll discuss it outside next time. We may take one or two weeks to be able to go over the material that is discussed in these texts, and hopefully we'll be able to get through it without giving you too much of a headache.